Interval 4. No flesh shall be spared. The warp, now.
Hunde!
The bitter blood heard the whelp calling his name, and with irritable slowness the old veteran allowed himself to come fully awake. His implanted auto-senses flickered into action. The visual, infrared, ultraviolet, and terahertz wave phases, all overlapping into a single mass of input.
Who speaks?
The question grated through the sour air of the arming chamber, issuing out of the vocoder module across the front of his armoured form. The barrel-chested Contemptor dreadnought shifted on his support frame, making the iron girders creak. He flexed the thick fingers of his combat fists and turned an optic towards the legionary standing in the chamber's doorway. A line death guard, but his sigils were those of Captain Calgaro's cohort, not of the First Company.
"It is I, Zuriak."
The young warrior's reply seemed laboured, almost as if he were out of breath, as impossible as that was for a Genhance legionary.
"Raheb?"
The bitterblood generated a rough, sawtooth noise that was as close as he could come to a chuckle.
"What are you doing here? It has been too long, young one."
The humour faded.
"Is something amiss?"
Zuriak didn't answer, and instead he made sharp gestures to the serfs and Meccano menials who had been in the midst of performing a maintenance cycle on the venerable veteran's iron body. They took the hint and left quickly, leaving the two Death Guard warriors alone.
"Calgaro told me to seek you out," said the legionary at length. "We both agreed. If anyone aboard the Terminus Est can be asked to have an honest eye on this ship, it would be Hunde Skorval."
The Bitterblood laughed again.
"An honest eye on the ship, or its commander. I'll warrant you wish to know more about Typhon's intent than that of his vessel."
"Aye, that is the truth."
Zuriak halted, leaning heavily against a guardrail.
"For blade's sake, why is it so infernally hot in here?"
"What say you?"
The veteran checked his aura scan, but the ambient atmospheric readings came back within normal ranges. Zuriak was still speaking.
"You've been attached to Typhon's command since he took his splinter fleet and went on his sojourn. Calgaro has his questions about what happened during the time the first captain was away, and there are few we could trust to be—"
He faltered briefly, as if losing his way.
"To be forthright, you are among that number."
"I know little I could tell you,"
the veteran admitted, shifting his heavy frame against the safety restraints that held him in place.
"Typhon had little use for me. I think he kept me down here because he knows I think he's an upstart. I knew him at the beginning, Raheb, just as I know you, before you were uplifted to the Legion."
He trailed off. Although all that remained of his flesh was interred in a plasteel coffin at the heart of the Contemptor's powerful cybernetic mechanism, the Bitterblood still remained more human than machine, and a pang of concern cut through him as he scanned Zuriak's biosigns. The young warrior's flesh was ruddy and filmed with oily sweat, and the veteran immediately recognized the signature effects of legionary internal implants operating over capacity. Even at a remove, he could tell that Zuriak's pre-omnor, oolitic kidney, and Laraman's organ were all engaged in fighting off something within him.
"Lad,"
he said sharply, as Zuriak's attention drifted away into the middle distance.
"Are you injured?"
On a sub-channel Voxlink, the Bitterblood was already transmitting a priority request for an apothecary.
"What has sickened you?"
I don't know."
Zuriak pawed at his gauntlets, sluggishly pulling them free to let the metal gloves clatter to the deck.
"This fatigue came upon me suddenly, as I moved down ship to find you."
The legionary took a step and wavered, abruptly doubling over as if he had been struck in the gut.
Ah!
The bitter blood's concern overrode his decorum, and he broke himself free of the safety locks, rising to advance on the other death guard.
Raheb, look at me!
Zuriak tried to raise his head, but then a rolling shock of pain went through the warrior, with such force that it silenced him. He went rigid and gagged. A grotesque liquid choking emitted from his open mouth, and suddenly Zuriak was vomiting up a jet of viscous black bile, spewing it across the deck plates. He cried out in raw agony and sank to his knees before retching again, his hunched form quaking in uncontrolled spasms. The veteran went to his side, the Contemptor stooping down to gather him up, and as he did, the Bitterblood's senses registered something writhing and moving in the dark pool of steaming ejecta. Tiny forms that resembled maggots were hatching as he watched, turning inside out to become silver-black flies with wet, flickering wings. Zuriak howled and drew into himself, his dense bones cracking against one another with the force of his palsy. Drawn back by the legionary's cries, two of the serfs stood mouths agape at the chamber entrance, and for a moment the veteran thought they were struck dumb by the sight of a nigh invulnerable death guard in such agony. But then the human menials began clawing at their exposed skin and screaming, before they too spat out their innards in streaming black floods.
"Contagion!"
bellowed the Bitterblood. The word at once a digitized shout and a warning broadcast across the Voxnet.
"Contagion here! Seal the decks!"
A trembling hand reached up and clawed at the veteran's armour.
"Help me!"
gasped Zuriak, as his eyes turned milky. All across the legionary's exposed flesh, hundreds of livid boils were rising to the surface of the skin, each one set in a cluster of three. The Valetudinarium fell silent as the Primarch entered the compartment, and for a moment the only sound in the ship's medical bay was the huffing gasp of atmosphere processors and the low chime of life sensors. Mortarion's searching gaze found Morag, the apothecary Croesus, and the old war dog Scorval, standing in a half-circle before a sealed chamber of plasteel and crystal flex. He marched to them, and the dreadnought moved to block his way.
"Lord, no,"
began the veteran, the tone of his vocoder surprisingly gentle.
"Step aside, Bitterblood," Mortarion told him. "I want to see."
"It is a horror,"
Scorval said grimly.
"Blind me, but I wish I had not witnessed it."
The cyborg stepped back, and his machine form seemed to slump.
"I would not desire it for my worst rival."
Annoyance flared in the Primarch.
"Old fool," he thought to himself. "What sentiment is that?"
But then Mortarion looked into the sealed chamber where Zuriak lay, and what he saw there was indeed a horror. The Death Guard Primarch had seen monsters, and he had seen murders. The creatures, stitched together from cruelty and corpses that the overlords had made, were the stuff of mortal nightmares, the wreckage of living things left behind in their battles, and then the wretched debris of ruined life Mortarion had met during the conflicts of the Great Crusade. All these sights were terrible enough to haunt the soul and curdle the spirit of a common man. Over time, he had become inured to such things. Indeed, he had often been responsible for them.
But this...
It gave even his mighty will harsh pause. What lay on the Medicaid bed was just barely recognizable as Raheb Zuriak, but his body, stripped of his armour and skin suit, was a grotesque parody of what it should have been. The lean and whipcord strong form of the Death Guard had been corrupted into a livid, sickened mockery of itself. Flesh had become a grey, surreal mass of putrid matter, sloughing off the stricken warrior in stinking sheaves. Blackened nubs of bone protruded from great weeping wounds that dripped blue-yellow ichor. Thick, glutinous liquids pooled on the plasteel deck, mixing and foaming. A cloud of silver-black motes danced around Zuriak's corpse-like frame, The tiny flies alighting to eat at the raw edges of lesions or lay eggs that bloomed into writhing maggots. Zuriek resembled a corpse left to the rot of months in a wet, cloying wilderness, and yet impossibly he was still alive. His chest rose and fell in stutters, punctuated by coughing fits that spat green phlegm across the crystal flex barrier. The young warrior had not been alone in there. Mortarion saw the dissolved remains of a pair of Medicaid servitors lying where they had fallen. The machine slaves were quite dead, drowned in their own diseased blood.
How is he still alive?
The question slipped from Mortarion before he was aware of it.
Unknown, said Croesus. My lord, I have never seen the like of this. His secondary heart has already burst, and the majority of his organs have shut down.
His gene seed?
Croesus shook his head.
I fear it is compromised beyond all hope of extraction. I am still struggling to grasp what I am looking at, but I believe it is a kind of chimeric disease vector.
Chimeric? Morag echoed the word.
You mean like a mutant?
Croesus actually smiled a little. He was transfixed, fascinated by the foul power of the contagion that had claimed the young warrior.
Oh no, Equerry. More than that. This viral clade is utterly protean and highly infectious. It is formless and all forms at once. It is not just one disease.
It's all of them.
That's impossible,
grunted the Bitterblood, flexing his heavy fists.
Why was I unaffected, then? I have flesh within my iron shell.
He banged twice on his chest plate.
I have not sickened.
Morag shot the Primarch a look.
Scorval saw Rahab fall, my lord, and a dozen human crew along with him.
They perished in the time it took us to get him into the ISO chamber,
noted Croesus. Morag ignored the interruption and went on.
I ordered full mag radiation scouring and decontamination protocols in all locations he visited. But there was nothing. No trace of the infection.
It is choosy,
Croesus offered, clearly toying with the idea.
Perhaps it is intelligent.
Impossible, scoffed the old dreadnought. A virus is a mindless thing.
Is this something we brought from Innix? Demanded Mortarion. A weapon of last resort deployed against us?
The apothecary shook his head.
I don't believe so. I see the hand of the warp in this.
You are so sure?
The Bitterblood made a grinding noise.
How can you...
The dreadnought's words were cut off, as Zuriek emitted a raw, bellowing scream that chilled every soul that heard it. Mortarion watched his warrior weeping black, bloody tears, and deep in his heart the Reaper of Men felt something unfamiliar and seldom experienced. Pity.
He is in a great deal of agony,
said Croesus, breaking the sullen silence that followed.
Enough to drive even the strongest of us insane.
Mortarion barely registered the words. With a monumental effort, Zuriek had managed to turn his head, so his blighted gaze met that of his Primarch. The cast of the legionary's face was a sorrowful entreaty, begging for only one thing.
Can you restore him?
Croesus's lip curled.
I do not know, my lord. I think it's unlikely.
Give me your knife,
said the Primarch, holding out his hand to Morag. The equerry did as he was told, his eyes narrowing. Mortarion weighed the weapon, and then found his helmet hanging off the magplate at his thigh. Donning it, he activated an Ultima-level environment seal in his armour with a blink-click command, and walked towards the airlock, sealing the isolation chamber from the rest of the medical bay. The Bitterblood raised one clawed hand.
You will expose yourself to the contagion, lord. You cannot...
Do not speak to me of what I cannot do, old friend. I do not fear this.
Mortarion entered the lock and let it cycle him through. Inside the ISO chamber, a blood-boiling heat radiated from the stricken figure on the Medicaid platform. Zuriek tried to raise a hand and failed, trembling with violent palsy. He mouthed a word, unable to speak it aloud. Peace.
Yes, said Mortarion, holding up the knife.
The blade was heavy, a bone cutter, and it would do the required deed. He hesitated, turning the weapon in his fingers.
I know what you wish.
It took all of Zuriek's will to manage a single nod. Mortarion listened to his own rasping breath within the confines of his helmet. The sound was lonely and distant, heavy with the despair of what he knew he must do.
You are my loyal son, he told the legionary. You have served the Death Guard with honour. You need suffer no more. Rest now.
With a swift motion, Mortarion buried the equerry's knife in Zuriek's chest, cutting his primary heart in two. The killing blow was perfect. The stricken legionary sagged and became still.
It is done, intoned the Reaper of Men,
eyeing the Medicae Auspex module floating overhead on suspensers. The device's chimes were silent now.
Peace, my son, he began.
Zuriek bolted forward, half-flinging himself off the platform, a ghastly howl escaping his froth-rimed mouth. His blind eyes were black with tainted blood, and the buzzing mass of flies around him became a cloud of frenzied, droning smoke. Mortarion took a step back and watched, appalled, as Zuriek moved like a jerky marionette, reaching up to pull the combat knife from his chest. The blade came out in a whisper of ichor, and the Primarch saw that the metal was now corroded and brittle. The weapon clattered to the deck and broke into pieces, as Zuriek slumped back and writhed. The auto-senses in Mortarion's armour swept over the legionary and returned nothing but negative life signs. Zuriek was dead, and yet he was not. His body still moving, and those terrified eyes staring fixedly at his liegelord, begging him for an end he could not give. Mortarion drew back through the airlock and stood in silence for what seemed like hours, as the stringent decontamination process scoured every part of his armour. The Primarch hesitated to look back. Whatever tormenting force now animated Zuriek, it was not some ethereal intelligence that had co-opted his flesh, and Mortarion knew that with all his soul. The man back there in that chamber was the same one he had recruited from Barbarus many years before. Dead, and yet undying. The planet Barbarus before. The township was called Hela's Cut, so Mortarion had learned on that first fateful night when he arrived, trailing after the souls he helped to liberate from Nakare's capture. A small settlement in one of the valleys, it was little more than a cluster of domiciles around a low-ceilinged hall and communal storehouses. A wide disk of hard wheat fields radiated out around it, providing harvest for the locals and food for their animals. There were perhaps 200 lessers living within its domains, and they were terrified of him. That first night, weeks ago now, had been fraught. So much happened so quickly, it had been difficult to assimilate it all. Still, he replayed and puzzled over the reactions of the people to the shock return of their kindred. So many of them wept with joy and showed each other affection of such purity that it made Mortarion's chest ache. He felt the echo of an emotion there that his young mind was unable to frame, a sentiment that he had never experienced, yet desperately wanted to. But he hid that need out of old habit, for fear it would be seen as weakness. He buried it when he saw their faces turn towards him, and the pale-skinned Kallas, the outcast with the acid tongue and fast eyes. An argument ensued. Some wanted to send the escapees back into Nakari's clutches, for fear that the High Overlord would come to Hela's Cut and obliterate it in totality for daring to rebel against his culling. Others openly called for Mortarion and Kallas to be put to death, despite the fact that they had been instrumental in the rescue. In the end, those they helped save brought forth a sort of accommodation, as meagre as it was. They allowed the two of them shelter in a tumble-down stable at the edge of the village, gave them wood for a fire, and food, too, after a fashion. It was a grey stew from a communal cauldron, but to Mortarion it was better than anything he had consumed back up in his mountain bastion. He stood for days at the door of the stables, an unmoving sentinel, waiting for his foster father to come after him. But Nakare did not show his hooded face, and after a while the settlement returned to a kind of equilibrium. In the weak light of the day, the hardy people would work the fields. As the night drew in, they would cluster together in the centre of the town to eat and to rest. Callas told him that the odd lilting sounds they made were called songs, and sometimes he would hear the lessers laughing. He had encountered that before, of course, but the insane babble of golems or the vicious sniggering of an overlord were always troubling, unpleasant noises. He felt the ache again, and when he was alone he tried to explore it, to map the dimensions of the strange sensation. But all Mortarion found was a void inside himself, a space that he did not know how to fill.
"I think we need to move on," said Callas, drawing Mortarion back to the present.
He sat cross-legged in front of their fire pit, poking at the yellow flames.
"I've overheard some of them talking about us. A lot of the menfolk think they'll avoid the Overlord's eventual revenge if you and I are gone."
"No."
"No what?"
Callas shot him a look.
"Listen to me, Mortarion. There are people who would gladly stake out our corpses on the hillside if they thought it would grant them some protection from the culls. We should go."
He paused.
"If we stick together, we can survive out there."
Mortarion eyed the pale youth.
"Don't you want to stay with your own kind?"
Callus's expression turned stony.
"My kind? Do you know what my kind did in the village where I was born? They drowned my mother and tried to do the same to me, all because she had been unlucky enough to have an overlord take a shine to her face."
He lost himself in the flames for a moment.
"I'm an outsider like you."
"You are not like me."
Mortarion turned to face him.
"I'm just a killer.
You can make magic. I saw you do it in the pass." Callas sneered and spat into the flames.
"You're mistaken. I have some skills, that's all. Things that soft minds don't understand."
Mortarion considered pressing the point, then chose not to. For now, other things were of greater import.
"Where can we go? If not here, where? At least these people have shown us a degree of gratitude."
"You seek kindness from them,"
Callas retorted, making it a statement rather than a question.
"We can't earn that. To them, I'm a half-breed and you are an overlord's pet death dealer."
A group of solemn-faced harvesters trooped dejectedly past the stables on their way into the fields, all of them carrying flails and sickles as they set out to do the day's work. Their conversations became muted when they noticed Mortarion watching them, only picking up once more when they thought they were out of earshot.
"No,"
Mortarion said again, as a moment of clarity came to him.
"This is not a matter of what I seek, Callas. It's about what these people need."
He pointed.
"Look at them. They grasp at every tiny spark of life, desperate and afraid in all their thoughts and deeds. Their existence is nothing but fear and dread."
He knew that life just as well as the lessers did. For all the difference in their circumstances, Mortarion realized it was something that they all shared.
"Well, that's the way things are," replied the pale youth. "The way things have always been."
"That is going to change."
Mortarion pushed open the stable door and started after the harvesters.
"Where are you going?"
Callas called after him. But he ignored the words. Each day Mortarion had stood and waited for his foster father's revenge to unfold, he had listened to the voices of the villagers and grown to understand their fears. Despite the grey and hopeless cast to their lot, many of the Barbarans still tried to kindle a fire in their hearts. He admired their great endurance, and he understood their simmering resentment. This was a world forever turning on an axis of injustice, with the overlords playing their petty games of hate and victimizing the humans over and over again. But these people lacked the impetus to do something about it. They were isolated and alone. They had no guidance. They had no hope. The balance was wrong. It had to stop. The cruelty of Nikare and all the other parasites would end.
And I will do it.
The idea swelled inside him as Mortarion walked into the fields, amid dozens of shocked gazes and silenced voices from the townsfolk. It would take time. He would need an army. But it could be done. Mortarion halted at the edge of a full-grown field of crops and watched the men there pause in their work as they chopped at the tough hard wheat stalks with their hand blades. Casting around, he spotted the broken works of what had been a heavy sickle cutter. Usually, the great cart-like farming implement would be hauled by a burdened beast, but the wheels were damaged, and the device was inoperative. Undaunted, Mortarion went to the machine and opened it up, reaching inside its workings to dismount a tool that better suited his height and grasp. His strong hands emerged with a great scythe gripped in them, the shaft and the dense crescent blade too heavy for any of the lessers to lift, let alone wield. He let it swing at the air a few times. It felt right. Then, without waiting to be asked, Mortarion stepped into the field and began to cut. With each swipe of the scythe, he took down 5 times as much crop as any of the others, and it wasn't long before they were moving in his wake, gathering up the quicker harvest. As the day wore on, the work went quickly and evenly, so much so that the locals had to struggle to match Mortarion's pace. He heard rough laughter cut the air. Good-humoured, it was a faint ghost of warmth in the cold of the valley.
"Is this your plan?"
Mortarion glanced back and found Kallas by his side. To his surprise, the pale youth had followed him out and was doing his part to gather up the sheaves of hard wheat, albeit reluctantly.
"You think swinging a cutter will make them like you?"
He paused to take a deep breath. The sallow sun was setting, and off towards the edge of the fields, a faint mist of chem haze gathered where the long shadows fell.
"I will earn their respect," said Mortarion. "You would do well to do the same, Kallas."
Far across the fields, a horn hooted. It was the signal to end the work of the day and return to the village proper. The pale youth glanced in that direction, then smirked and nodded towards the scythe.
"You don't need to earn anything, Reaper. You could take it. Not a soul back there could match you in a straight challenge."
Mortarion shook his head slowly, eyeing the encroaching edges of the mist. He reached up to push a length of black hair from his eyes.
"Fear is a weapon I only use on my enemies."
Kallas's smirk grew towards a sneer. But before he could say more, a distant crunch of breaking wood and the sharp cry of a child echoed through the air. Mortarion's grip stiffened around the scythe, and he pivoted towards the source of the sound. Off across the fields, a scatter of dust was moving on the wind, marking the place where one of the village's communal carts had tipped over. He saw several of the harvesters drop their gatherings and run towards the stricken vehicle. The child's cry came again, this time a thin scream of agony. Someone shouted for help, and other men sprinted back towards the village. Then Mortarion's preternaturally sharp senses caught the odour of fresh blood. Without thinking, he jammed the shaft of the scythe upright into the brown-black earth and covered the distance to the stricken wagon in a few heartbeats. The locals clustered around saw him coming and backed away, giving Mortarion room to see what was going on. Men had been dragging the heavy cart, laden with bales of hard wheat, back in the direction of the storehouses, and a wheel had become fouled in a hidden gully. He saw how it had happened. The massive weight of the wagon broke the wheel as it shifted the wrong way, sending the whole thing off balance. There was a child trapped beneath the wagon's frame, pinned into the gully where the cart had caught her as it fell. A waif of a teenage girl, one of the younger villagers who had the duty of carrying bags of twine for securing the bales. Blood flowed freely from a gash on her head, and she was turning white with shock. The muddy ground beneath her was slowly giving in, and moment by moment the wagon pressed more of its weight upon her thin, bony body.
"We can't leave her out here,"
hissed one of the harvesters.
"Sun's gone down now," argued another. "The mist rising with it. You know what that means."
Mortarion knew. The people in the settlement kept pitch-blende torches burning all through the hours of darkness to fend off the fogs that encroached in the night. Things moved and skittered about in that fog, predatory things that he knew full well would take apart any human they came across. The lines of torches didn't extend out this far, though.
"Look at it,"
snarled the second man, as the cold breeze picked up.
"We'll need 20 able souls to move that thing. By the time they get back here, the mist will be on us."
He swallowed hard.
"It'll be more of a kindness if we..."
"Stand aside," said Mortarion.
The harvester was reaching for his cutting blade as he spoke, but even the gentlest of Mortarion's shoves threw him back into the mud on his behind. He stepped around the fallen man and crouched by the hub of the broken wheel, fingering the axle. The child trapped beneath it blinked at him, petrified.
"What does she see when she looks at me?"
The question rose in Mortarion's thoughts.
"Death itself come to claim her?"
He silenced the doubts and set his feet in the muddy ground to square a stance. Then Mortarion put both hands around the cart's axle and lifted its tremendous weight with a low grunt of effort. It rose out of the mire with a sucking gulp, and he held it there. For a moment no one spoke. All the harvesters were shocked silent. It was Kallas who finally shouted at them.
"Don't just stand there gawking, you fools! Pull her out!"
The girl coughed and fainted as they moved her, and he spied an ugly wound along her thigh, but Mortarion sensed that she would survive. As a pair of the harvesters carried her away as quickly as they could, he let the wagon down once more, without disturbing a single one of the bales piled upon it. He watched the men diminish towards the glow of the border torches being lit, aware of the night coming in all around. The one light of the day drained away as swiftly as water would soak into earth. The man that Mortarion had knocked down was back on his feet.
"We're going to have to leave the cart."
He seemed to have some degree of authority among the other harvesters, perhaps as a foreman or some such.
"Everyone take as many bales as you can carry,"
he ordered, and the other harvesters set about to follow his command.
"Leave it," said Mortarion.
"We can't,"
retorted the senior man.
"That's a day's work there. Not that I expect you to understand."
Mortarion looked around. The breeze was stiff and strong now, and buoyed along with it, the curls of the mist were moving more swiftly. He caught sight of Kallas's face. His outcast companion was staring out at nothing, as if aware of something that only he could see.
"What is it?"
"They're here," he whispered.
"Hurry up,"
called the foreman, climbing atop the tilted wagon to supervise the others. He coughed and gasped as tendrils of mist wove overhead.
"The clouds will take our breath if we tarry."
He turned and aimed a finger at Mortarion.
"You, if you're so strong, you can carry a dozen times as much."
He never finished the sentence. Mortarion glimpsed the black cloaked shape rise up from the stands of uncut wheat and flash through the air in silence, saw it come up behind the man and dive in for the kill. There was the dull flash of distant torchlight off a wide bronze short sword, and the foreman lost his head. A fountain of glittering blood sprayed across the harvesters, and they scattered in fear. Mortarion's thoughts raced. How had he failed to hear the enemy approaching? Had it been the matter with the girl that distracted him? Even as another, more martial part of his mind saw the ghostly shapes forming in the depths of the fog bank. He regretted leaving the scythe behind, and scrambled to grab something like a weapon. His long fingers snatched up a fallen grain flail as new screams issued out on all sides. Nearby, Kallas reacted to the sight of one of the harvesters being jerked back out of the light and into the shadows. Mortarion heard the grinding crunch of bitten bone and the giggle of hungry golems.
"He came after us,"
said Kallas, gripping a cutter blade. He coughed as the mist began to thicken. Mortarion tasted the faint tang of the toxic haze, but the poison meant little to him.
"No,"
he said, eyes narrowing. this is not my foster father. Had Nakari wished to strike at Hela's Cut, the High Overlord would have begun with rains of fire spears and a horde of kill beasts. He was never one for subtlety when things angered him. No, this was somebody else. Mortarion heard the wicker and hiss of the bronze sword. He knew the owner of that weapon well. Desolem was another of the minor Overlord Carder, an overconfident schemer who long ago had planted his banner next to Nakare's, a sly creature who feasted off the crumbs of power that fell from the High One's table and grasped at any opportunity to show how sycophantic he could be. A rabble of Desolem's golem soldiers boiled out of the gloom and set about whomever they found. Kallas fought wildly, stabbing and cutting, and the few remaining harvesters who hadn't immediately run turned their work implements towards a desperate defence. A few fell, the golems diving on them to guzzle at opened wounds or drag them away. Mortarion ignored the carnage, taking a second to get in synchrony with the unfamiliar weight of the flail. Finding the rhythm, he used the heavy blunt end to stave in skulls, and the chain-linked head to break arms and legs. He lost himself in the killing, and it was easy to do. In the middle distance, Mortarion heard Desolem's high-pitched grating laughter, and it drew his attention from the immediate fight. His vision, far faster to night-adapt and keener than that of the others, let him pick out the spindly cloaked shape of the minor overlord. Desolem sailed through the fields of hardwheat as if floating, surrounded by a ring of his warriors. He appeared to be directing the actions of his golems with piercing shrieks of sound, in a way a shepherd would use a herd hound. Mortarion picked out other noises as well. The screams of villagers off in the distance. Desolem's golems had attacked there too, and he could see them falling back now, carrying the bodies of those they had taken. Most of the abductees were still alive, thrashing and clawing at their abductors, but the moment they entered the mists, the humans stopped fighting and began clawing at their throats. The toxic air would soon suffocate them. Kallas, too, was gasping and wheezing now.
The fog! Get it thicker!
He staggered away, following the surviving harvesters as they were forced to retreat back towards the relative safety of the settlement and the clearer air around it.
Can't stay here!
Mortarion hesitated. Desolem's laughter echoed from deeper into the mists, mocking and baleful.
He thinks they won't follow.
Mortarion said the words out loud.
He thinks they can't.
With a grimace, he tossed the flail away and broke into a run once more, his powerful whipcord legs pumping as he sprinted towards the place where he had left the scythe. The weapon was still there, the curve of the sickle blade a steel pennant frozen in motion. Mortarion snatched it up as he passed and pivoted towards the mass of the retreating golems, without losing momentum. He understood now why his foster father had not come for him in person. Nakari was too clever for that, too underhanded. The High Overlord would be treating his foundling son's latest defiance in the same way he did with every aspect of Mortarion's growth, as a test. As by what metric that test would be judged a failure or a success, Mortarion no longer cared. Desolem was still braying his contemptuous laughter when Mortarion caught up with the Overlord in the thickening mist just beyond the edge of the cropfields and butchered all but one of his warriors. The human abductees were all dead now, choked into cold silence, but those who had taken them followed the same path into darkness at Mortarion's hand. The farm machine scythe became a very different kind of tool as the shining sharp edge cut down the babbling, stitched-together creatures. Cords of intestine and steaming heaps of gore spattered over the sparse grasses of the moorland as howls of agony were cut short. Mortarion made certain to disarm and near cripple one single golem before using the flat of the scythe to batter Desolem into the mud. The Overlord spat venom back at him, screaming curses at Mortarion for daring to strike one of his betters.
"You believe you can come here and kill with impunity?"
Mortarion told him.
"You believe the mists protect you, that nothing human can touch you."
He gestured at the poisonous haze all around them. That changes tonight. Desolem's rat-like face screwed up in a moment of confusion, and that was when Mortarion killed him. The hooked tip of the scythe entered the overlord's body at the throat and travelled down the length of his torso, allowing a stinking flow of mutant offal to burst out and soil the dark earth. Mortarion turned to glare at the remaining survivor.
You live because I want a messenger.
He leaned in and spoke slowly and clearly, so that there would be no misunderstanding.
Tell Nakare and the others to prepare. However long it takes, the reign of the overlords on Barbaros will end. I shall come for them all.
Then he turned away and walked back towards the flickering glow of the torches. The warp, now. Dead and yet undying. The horror of it had driven Mortarion away, and even the stringent decontamination process had not been able to boil off the sick dread that washed back and forth in the Primarch's thoughts. What he had seen in the isolation chamber was something he had always believed was impossible. He was humble, or perhaps he had been humbled by hard experience, enough to know that there was much in the universe that he did not understand. Mortarion had witnessed many things in his time, terrors and delights alike so strange that no common mind could have beheld them and remained sane. But throughout all his years as master of the Death Guard, there were a handful of unshakable truths that he held as inviolate and unchangeable. They were the pillars upon which his sense of self and upon which the very soul of his legion were based. The Death Guard never retreat. We always resist. We do not fear death. We are not weak. But Zuriek's horrifying decay and undeath put the lie to all of that. Never in all his life had Mortarion encountered a venom or weaponized malaise that the Death Guard had been unable to defy. His warrior sons drank poison like water. They breathed nerve gases and toxins as if they were the purest inhalation of air, and their unbreakable constitutions shrugged off any viral clade that either nature or twisted science could throw at them. No Death Guard legionary had ever died in that fashion. No one, be they a Pale Sun or Terran-born warrior, had ever shamed the 14th Legion by falling prey to something as paltry as a sickness. Until Zuriek. For that was what had claimed him. A contagion so incredibly virulent that it could burn through the fortress walls of his body and the soldiery of his bloodstream. Poor Zuriek had been invaded. No worse than that. He had been conquered from within by the chimeric phage that Crozius had spoken of. A disease that could cripple the most indomitable of the Legiones Astartes. Before, Mortarion would have ridiculed the notion, but he had seen it with his own eyes, and the reality shook him. The strength of the Death Guard was to him an immutable law. To see it so thoroughly broken was an event he had no way to frame. And if that were not enough, it seemed the power of this capricious virus reached into the realm of the unearthly as well. How else could one explain the undeath? By all known measures, Zuriek should have been a corpse. And yet he lived still, if such a grotesque existence could still be called that. Mortarion looked down at his gauntlets. He had silenced the beating of his son's heart as a mercy, to free him from this shame, only to watch the blade he used turn to rust and crumble. The decay, the living rot, the infestation, whatever it was, had transformed the legionary. Into what, the Primarch did not know. On entering the command deck of the Terminus Est, Mortarion's gaze was immediately drawn to Typhon. The first captain was engaged in conversation with his officer, Vios, and Mortarion's equerry. Morag gave his master a warning look, and he had the immediate sense that the matter of Raheb Zuriak's strange condition was only one of his problems.
"What now?"
he demanded, cutting through the tense silence that had fallen.
"There's been a development,"
said Typhon, his expression neutral.
"It seems our trial is upon us."
Mortarion angrily waved him away and focused all his attention on Morag.
"Speak, Kaifa."
The equerry's hands clasped one another.
"Lord Mortarion, the Vox operators have been following my orders to check in with the commanders of the other ships in our flotilla. The reports they have returned are troubling." "It's happening out in the fleet," added Vios. "Documented instances aboard the Balefire, Indomitable Will, Lord of Hyrus, and several others."
"How many?"
"Hundreds, and more with each passing hour," said Vios.
Morag gave a solemn nod.
"The same malady that befell Zuriak, the chimeric infection." "How can this be?"
thundered Mortarion.
"There has been no physical contact between those ships and this one. How could it spread?"
He glared at Vios, daring him to say that was not so, but the Grave Warden nodded in agreement.
"No direct contact has occurred between any ships since we left Innix, with the exception of the docking of Greenheart and the shuttle that brought the Lieutenant here from the Endurance."
Vios anticipated Mortarion's next question before he uttered it.
"Captain Calgaro's senior apothecary confirmed there have been no recorded outbreaks of the Chimera aboard your battle barge, my lord."
"Not yet," muttered Typhon, drawing a hard glare from his commander.
"Our enemies could have secreted a weapon on our ships," offered Morag, thinking out loud. "Something that acted in a delayed fashion." "Your theory does not track. The craft that have declared contagion outbreaks follow no pattern to that end," said Vios. "Some are part of the splinter fleet, newly arrived from another sector. Others are those that travelled with the Endurance to Innix."
Morag glanced at Typhon.
"True. But if the perfidy of the navigators was as widespread as the first captain suggests, this might be another aspect of that conspiracy."
"Who among my loyalist brethren could even conceive of such an underhanded assault?" Mortarion scowled. "Gilliman and Dorn don't have it in them. The Wolf or the Khan are too proud."
"Perhaps the Lord Korax?"
Morag took up the thread.
"Ah, curse me if this situation doesn't have the fingerprints of the Hydra all over it." "The Alpha Legion stand with us under the Warmaster's banner,"
insisted Vios.
"What benefit would they gain from attacking an allied legion?"
Typhon gave a shake of the head, cutting off the line of argument.
"Forgive me, but this must be said. We cannot limit ourselves to thoughts upon conventional lines and place blame in ordinary means."
He took a step towards his Primarch.
"Do not forget where we are. Our ships travel through the deeps of the Immaterium, and that must not be forgotten. The realities of our material universe are malleable in this realm."
He drifted off, examining the shutters across the command deck's exterior portals, running a hand over them.
"Here, all barriers are permeable." "The Geller fields keep the warp at bay," insisted Morag. "It has no purchase within our ships."
"And yet..."
Typhon gave him a sideways look.
"All walls can fall if enough pressure is applied. Every Death Guard knows that truth."
"Then what would you have us do, Captain?"
Mortarion demanded.
"You already know my thoughts on this, Lord."
Mortarion swallowed his annoyance and turned away to find the Terminus Est's communicatory pit, where hooded crew serfs monitored the intermediate-range Vox systems that allowed the vessels of the fleet to converse with one another over short, substellar distances. He stalked closer, then they all bowed in unison.
"Look at me,"
he growled, irritated by their diffidence.
"Open the Vox network to all our craft. Voice signal, hololithic datum line. All channels and general frequencies.
I want every ship in the fleet to heed my words."
A brassy armature folded down from the ceiling of the chamber and turned to present a scanning head to the Primarch. Unfolding into a flower, at its centre was a thick glass lens, and the device emitted a fan of red laser light, scanning in his form and rendering it into a digital form for transmission. The most senior of the Vox serfs gave a bow to cue him, and Mortarion drew in a slow breath. He disliked the performative aspect of speaking in such a manner. He had never been one for clever speeches and poetic oratory. That sort of thing he left to Horus, Lorgar, or the Phoenician. Mortarion did not know how to speak in as theatrical a way as his siblings did. He could only give from the heart, be direct and unvarnished. "My sons," he intoned, and Mortarion heard the echo of his words resonating distantly through the decks of the Terminus Est. Silence fell in their wake, here and on every craft where the signal reached.
"We have been waylaid."
He resisted the impulse to glance towards Typhon, sensing the first captain at the edges of his perception.
"An unidentified malaise of great potency and chimeric form is loose among our number. At this hour, there is no cure. This weapon poses a true threat, even to us. It cannot be allowed to spread unchecked, and for the moment, the face of our true enemy, the culprit behind this contagion, remains unclear."
He paused to let that sink in.
"All commanders log my order. Every ship in the fleet is to seal its airlocks, landing bays, and launch tubes. Teleportariums are to be taken offline. A total lockdown protocol is now in effect, so that we may marshal our strength against this insidious assault and work to expunge it. Lines of communication will be opened between all senior apothecaries on all ships. Pool your knowledge, my sons. Examine this contagion and bring me word of how to kill it."
He raised one hand to make a throat-cutting gesture to end the transmission, but hesitated before the motion. The faint shade of the bone-deep dread he had experienced in the isolation chamber ghosted around him, and Mortarion wondered if his legionaries sensed some measure of it too. Was there fear in his voice? He could not leave his sons with such thoughts to dwell upon.
"Be sure. This pestilence," he began again, grasping for the right words, "this destroyer plague will not end us. We shall face it and do as the Death Guard will. We will endure. We will advance. My father's palace stands, awaiting the thunder of our boots. We will see the sun set on the Emperor's corrupt imperium, my warriors. I swear that to you, on the black sands of Lost Barbarus. We will break those walls and have our due. What is owed shall be called to full account."
Now the words came to him easily, even as Mortarion realized that he was echoing what Typhon had told him earlier.
"We are facing a great test, but the Legion will survive this poison."
He reached back in his thoughts for a familiar oath, rejecting the hollow ring that came with it.
"You are my unbroken blades. By your hand shall justice be delivered, and doom shall stalk the halls of terror." "For Barbarus and the Legion," snarled Typhon.
His attestation repeated a heartbeat later by Vios, Morag, and everyone else on the command deck. Mortarion knew that the same response was sounding on all the ships of the fleet, but drew his hand across his throat and cut the signal. Typhon continued to lead his crew in the salute, but Mortarion put a hand on his vambrace and pulled him away.
"Listen to me," he hissed, low and menacing,
quiet so that only the captain heard his words.
I want your specialists to get us out of this madness. Find a way to return our ships to the material realm. My lord, what you ask is not a simple task.
Typhon mirrored his low tones.
There are many dangers to be considered. Passing through the warp's veil is not like using a doorway. It is a maze that must be traversed. A shifting labyrinth with walls made of spokes.
Spare me,
Mortarion said, cutting him off. You say this malaise comes from the warp, but you are reluctant to leave it.
He leaned in.
What are you hiding from me, Typhon?
The first captain hesitated, as if he were surprised by the Primarch's accusation. Then he turned to look back at the sealed shutters, and his lips thinned.
You, more than any living being, know the true colour of my soul, Mortarion.
I do,
he agreed. That is why I'm asking you the question.
Typhon did not reply. Then out of nowhere, an alarm toxin brayed into life. Mortarion released his grip on the first captain and turned to Vios, snapping out a command.
Report!
The Grave Warden peered at a gas lens screen, and his eyes widened.
Scry sensors are registering an energy surge on board the Cauldrain.
Captain Taig's ship, noted Morag. A light cruiser from the Reprover battle element.
Show me,
Mortarion gestured. And from a hidden hololith emitter in the floor came a cone of emerald light. The glow formed into a scanner view of the Death Guard fleet, zooming in through the motes of colour to make the shape of the warship in question. The Cauldrain was under power, moving off its assigned position, making erratic turns as it extended away from the fleet.
Hail them,
he added.
No response, my lord, said one of the Vox operators. All communication channels are dark.
Confirming.
Vios gave a bleak nod.
Yes, the Cauldrain's warp engines are in flux and their Geller fields are reconfiguring. They're preparing to translate back to normal space.
That would be a mistake, said Typhon.
Mortarion gave him an angry look.
You have someone on that ship? Can you not breach them?
Typhon shook his head.
There is only fear and terror aboard that vessel now. A moment of weakness has doomed them.
The warning chimes changed tone, becoming strident and grating.
Energy surge increasing,
reported Vios.
They're attempting the jump.
Mortarion stared into the hololith as an eerie shimmer passed over the length of the Cauldrain's image. But what he saw was not the expected effect, with the destroyer falling away into a rip in space-time. Instead, the arrow prow of the 3-kilometer-long ship gave a violent shudder, and it began to twist. Mortarion's jaw hardened as he watched the vessel distort. It was as if an invisible giant held the craft at bow and stern, inexorably crushing it, bending and distending the Cauldrain into an unrecognizable mass of adamantium. Explosions flared all through the ruined hull, and strange torsions of metal grew out of the dying starship. It turned itself inside out, exposing crew decks and systems tiers, discharging atmosphere and debris into the Empyrean. And then, as a final brutality upon it, the Cauldrain imploded, collapsing into a dark, craggy fist of wreckage.
No life signs detected, said Vios after a moment. Sensors show evidence of a temporal displacement, mass inversion, and the ship is dead,
said Typhon, silencing the Grave Warden.
We must be cautious if we do not wish to see more of our brothers follow it into oblivion.
He walked away without sparing his Primarch another look.
I will return to the Sanctorum and find our path once more.
Mortarion watched him depart, suddenly gripped by the ominous sense that he had become a stranger aboard the ships of his own fleet.